has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode 519. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, the offseason, of course, well underway. Some teams actually already starting to make some signings and some trades. And Justin and I will kind of lay out for you what we think the Phillies could and or should do this coming offseason. I don't know if I'd say these are fully formed lined up blueprints or plans for what Dave Dombrowski and the Phillies should do, but they're certainly a good jumping off point. And so we'll give you our ideas on what would be a pretty good offseason for the Phillies. I've seen a lot of the perfect offseason plan kind of things out there, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you we've got that, but we've got something that's pretty close. So we'll break down what we see as some potentially good ideas for the Phillies here this offseason. Also, the OG Philly fanatic is coming back, and so we will detail exactly what's going on with the latest involving the Philly Fanatics legal case, and finally some resolution, and we're going to get old school Philly Fanatic back. So we'll jump into that coming up here in the next few minutes as well. Joining me, as he does every week, is my good pal Justin Clue, of course, from Baseball Prospectus and The Dirty Inning and Continued Success. You follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, what's up, pal?
A toxic smog cloud has arisen from the burning pigeon carcasses of Flushing, signifying that a new Mets general manager has been chosen.
That's right.
His name is Billy Epler, the guy who hired Mickey Callaway after the Mets, and also the guy who had Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani and still couldn't build a playoff roster. Mm-hmm. I literally just read the article announcing that Ohtani was going to the Angels back in 2017. And ESPN's or MLB.com's like, yeah, Billy Epler quite literally fell out of his chair when he was told that Shohei Ohtani wanted to sign with the Angels. So, like, even in that case, you don't give him credit for something
right.
like that.
It's just like,
He didn't think that was even going to happen.
Right, yeah. Right.
So anyway, he's gonna run the show for the Mets. Finally, we have an answer to this weeks-long drama.
Matt Klentak's former boss.
Remember, when Matt
was the assistant GM for the Angels. It was under Billy Epler. So Epler going to the Mets, and yeah, I mean it's not exactly like the Mets had a GM search that was wowing the league. It seemed like they talked to everybody for the job, and everybody turned them down. Yet Billy Epler said yes, and. Of course, his extensive playoff history with the Angels, of course, the resume that you want when you hire a GM. Although, you know, we can't make fun of the Mets too much here because I know the Phillies, you know, well, I guess that's true. But every time the Phillies make a big hire in the front office, we proclaim it to be something special, and you know it hasn't been thus far. So we'll see. But yeah, Billy Epler, not exactly a GM hire that makes you too terribly worried if you're a Phillies fan. I do wonder if this doesn't mean that Matt Klentak won't be moving over to the Angels at some point. You wonder if maybe there is a spot in Billy Epler's front office for his former protege.
Or even the Mets front office.
What did I say?
The Angels.
Ah, yes, I meant the Mets. Yes,
oh, I thought you meant the Angels. Like he could slide over to, you know, fill a role over there as well. But yeah, no, okay, yeah, the Mets, yes.
I meant with the Mets, yeah. So I was saying like maybe he goes back to like be an assistant GM under Epler over with the Mets. And yeah.
Hey, if the quarter zipped pullover fits, Matt Klentak will wear it.
That's right, exactly. Well, congratulations to the Mets for landing an also-ran general manager. It suits that organization, and so we'll look forward to seeing what Billy does over the next couple of years. And you know, Liz Rocher, normally of course part of our weekly crew, she's off tonight, just a little under the weather, but we'll be talking to her later on in the week. So Liz, feel better. But in the meantime, Justin and I, we're going to break down what we think are not our perfect off seasons, because there's, as we were doing this little exercise, there are so many different aspects and facets to trying to put this all together. And I know Justin and I kind of approached this from a different lens. I went through this exercise as if I were Dave Dombrowski, trying to work within the restrictions that I feel like he is most likely under. Like, I don't believe John Middleton is going over the luxury tax this offseason. So I'm trying to put together an offseason plan that keeps them under the luxury tax, that spends about what I think he'll have to spend. And we were talking about this earlier today. My sense from you is that you were going about the process as if to say, here's what the Phillies would do if the luxury tax wasn't an issue, correct?
John approached this exercise as though he were Dave Dombrowski. I approached this exercise by drinking most of a pot of coffee and scribbling across all the pages of a legal pad.
There you go.
We'll see how much overlap we have at the end of the day. As far as the exercises like this go, I do want to point out that Destiny Legardo over at Phillies Nation did a really good mock off season. If you take a look at that, it's kind of strikes the perfect balance of realistic, but also, well, that's what it is. It feels realistic. It feels like it could actually happen. Everybody she puts the Phillies picking checks multiple boxes, which is something I think the Phillies will prioritize. And I think John and I also have, I think, some pretty neat ideas and also some fun ideas. Mm-hmm. I think the whole point is we're early enough in the off season that it is whatever we decide it is at the
right
moment. You know,
right.
And the Phillies are a team that's going to be linked to just about every free agent. And there's also some pretty intriguing trade candidates out there as well that that they'll be thrown in the mix with because they have so many needs. So,
right. Yeah, no, and the Phillies, I think Dave Dombrowski is a guy who has made a lot of trades. He's not a guy who just simply goes with free agency. But trades are a little bit harder to predict because you don't know, maybe there's a player that's fallen out of favor with a front office, or you make a deal for a guy that you don't think is available, but all of a sudden he's on the move. So I think I do have a trade in mind, it's...
So do
it's,
I. Mine's
yeah.
awful. You guys are going to hate it.
But anyway, well, let's start. Do you want to start or do you want to hear mine first?
I'd love to hear yours first, actually.
Okay.
Just ground us.
All right. So this is, again, contingent on the reality the Phillies are not going over the luxury tax. According to SpotTrack, the Phillies have about $43 million in room under the tax right now. So these moves are designed to keep the Phillies under that number. I'm going to just mention straight out that the Phillies are not going to sign one of the big-name shortstops unless that player lingers into spring training and they can get a cheap deal, which I don't think is going to happen. You know, these guys are all going to make bank, even whatever the CBA happens to be. I think there are tiers among this shortstop class. I think you've got Corey Seager and Carlos Correa as a head and shoulders above the other guys. And then, you know, you've got Trevor Story, and I'm blanking on a couple of the other guys. I know Javier Baez is one of those guys. He's probably at the bottom end of the tier. But again, I think they're all going to be too expensive for a Phillies team that only has about $43 million. It sounds like a lot, but it's really not a whole lot of money to work with. So
The drop-off in this shortstop class, which we've been talking about this shortstop class for years, the drop-off is significant because after the tiers you're talking about from Correa, Story, Seager, Baez, next
Simeon,
thing you know,
Simeon's the other guy I was thinking of, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but they list him as a second baseman.
Yeah, and I think that's true. I think that's right.
But then, you know, before you realize it, you're looking at Freddie Galvis, you know, who obviously is Freddie Galvis. Andrelton Simmons, who had one of the worst seasons for a Minnesota Twins player possibly in history this year. So, like, there's severe drop. If you're trying to save money at the shortstop position, best of luck.
Yeah, no. You're not shopping at shortstop expecting for a bargain. You got to have a lot of money to play with. And so I just don't feel like the Phillies have a ton of money. And I know, you know, I think that Dombrowski listed a number of needs and shortstop wasn't one of them. You know, when he was speaking last week, he did not sound like a guy who was looking to make a big splash at the shortstop position. He mentioned left field. He mentioned center field. He mentioned closer. Those are the three main areas that he was talking about. And so those are the three areas that I focused most of my attention on.
Yeah, same. And I wanted to ask you, like, how do you see the shortstop position moving forward? Like, are we to assume, since he didn't seem to be prioritizing that at his press conference, that this really is just going to be a combination of Didi Gregorius and Bryson Stott moving forward? Like, this is the plan, the way that they kind of solidified third base is like, well, it's Alec Boehm. We're going to go with Alec Boehm until we decide not to anymore.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that was one of the things that we saw this week was that they are pushing for Bryson Stott to prepare himself to fight for that job in spring training. I think that they I think that they really believe he can fight for the opening day shortstop job. And I think that they are wanting him to take that job because you do have Didi Gregorius, who's still making, I think it was $14 million next year, average annual value. And so they're not going to be able to trade him and have another team pick up any of that salary. He was that bad last year. And so you could release him and just, you know, eat that money, but I don't see that as being a possibility. So what I think they want to do is have Bryson Stott win that job in spring training and have Didi Gregorius be kind of a backup or be a guy who floats between shortstop and second base and maybe plays some third base. And I will say this, I think Didi Gregorius, he looked washed up this year, but I don't know that he's going to be as bad next year. I think Didi Gregorius plays a little bit better that next year. It's hard to play any worse than he did this year.
I can see him being like a 220 hitter, you know, that kind of stuff, where that's not going to be super helpful, but it's not going to have him as talked about, because he's not going to be as staggeringly bad as he was this year.
Maybe he's not quite as much of a black hole defensively. Maybe he gives you a little more pop at the plate, you know, and maybe you only platoon him. And that's part of the plan that I have kind of lined up here is what to do with the shortstop position. But I'll start with the middle of the bat guy. And actually, I think this could be the middle of the bat guy, or it could be the leadoff guy. And I think this is a name that's starting to gather a little bit of momentum, because when you think about how much money the Phillies actually have to spend, I think the Phillies are going to have to find a guy who's not at the top of the free agent pile. But certainly a guy who can provide a healthy dose of offense. And his name has been linked to the Phillies quite a bit here, especially over the last few days. And I think it's Kyle Schwarber. We've talked about him a little bit here on the podcast. MLB Trade Rumors has him with a predicted contract of 4 years, $70 million. That's $17.5 million average annual value. I think if you're looking for a middle of the order bat, you want to have lefty, righty, lefty, righty in the middle of the order. And so with Bryce Harper as the lefty, and then you have Hoskins, Realmuto as the two righties, you would want another left-handed bat to kind of pair with those guys. So if you're hitting them 2-3-4-5 or 3-4-5-6, you can kind of, you know, bounce one side of the plate off the other. And so Kyle Schwarber does do that. He had a 3.2 wins above replacement in just 113 games last year, and that is while playing below average defense. It tells you how good his offense was. He had a 928 OPS for both the Nationals and then for the Red Sox late in the season, 148 OPS plus. Among players with at least 400 plate appearances last year, his 145 weighted runs created was 11th in baseball out of 188 players. He had 32 homers in 113 games and 19 doubles. He is, of course, a weak defender. He won't improve the defensive issues. The other guy that I thought really made a lot of sense was Chris Bryant. I still do think he makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Not to cut you off, I also have Kyle Schwarber being a great Philly sign because of the multiple boxes he checks in left field and with the bat and being able to lead off. He hit .297. He had a 12.16 OPS hitting in the top spot this year.
Yep.
And that you mentioned the 32 home runs, 17 of them came while he was leading off. So like, this is a guy who does both of those jobs, and they can cross two things off their list. It's probably the highest profile signing I'm thinking of. It's about the level of profile signing I can see the Phillies making this year. Cause you're right. I think they stay clear of that shortstop class. I think this is a guy who helps. This is a guy who, when they described who they were looking for, Schwarber is that guy. So I have him as well, because you assume you're going to get that defensive coverage from whoever is in center field, however you improve there. If you're focusing on speed and defense there, knowing that Schwarber's, you know, he's your leadoff guy, you don't necessarily need a leadoff hitter to be in center field, then you can focus on somebody who's able to get the outs that Schwarber might not be able to get to.
Right. Well, and that takes me right into my next move, because I look at Schwarber's defense in left field, and it is not good. So you need to have a good defensive center fielder. And I felt like, well, you can have Schwarber lead off, and so you don't need your center fielder to be the leadoff guy, but you do need him to be a well above average defensive center fielder. And so this is where the trade comes in, and I have the Phillies trading for Kevin Kiermaier. According to SpotTrack, Kevin Kiermaier has counts $8.9 million against the luxury tax this year. He's under team control for the next 2 years. I like the idea of Starling Marte. I'm just not sure how many more years he has as a defensive center fielder. He'd also, again, be very expensive, so you wouldn't be able to get Schwarber and Marte. If you get Marte, you would bat Marte leadoff, and he would be your center fielder for 2022. It's after 2022 that it would be some question mark there. But I don't dislike the idea of adding Marte. But I think here you can get your big bat in left field and still get a well above average defensive center fielder. He's going to be 30. He's 32 years old. He's not a great hitter. 104 OPS plus in 122 games for Tampa this year, but was still worth 3.5 wins above replacement. So that tells you how good his defense still is. I think Tampa is going to be looking to move him. They have other center field candidates there, and Brett Phillips and Manny Margot. They've got too many outfielders. They need to trade somebody, and he's at the top of their payroll. He's a guy who he makes more than any other Rays player. And whenever you have that distinction as a member of the Tampa Bay Rays, you're not going to be there very long. So
I would love that trade. I think that would be, obviously it kind of depends on who the Phillies give up, which I'm not sure are you getting into the details of that as well?
I said, basically, I think you're going to probably have to dip into your prospect pool and give up something like your number five and your number six prospect, or your number five and your number eight prospect, or something like that. He's not going to cost you Mick Abel, Andrew Painter, or Bryson Stott or anything like that, but you might have to give up like an Ethan Wilson, or maybe you give up, maybe Matt Vierling is part of a deal where you combine him with Francisco Morales or something like that. You know, you and I are both, we're not deep into the prospects,
I agree with that. I think that's the level, like that's a decent level that even like people with a peripheral knowledge of the prospect pool the Phillies have available to them aren't going to feel like the Phillies are blasting through their top prospects when they have to go that low. Honestly, I had a couple, like looking at, I was marveling at, well, not marveling. I was looking at Austin Meadows' numbers today.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just in the same vein, not really coming up with anything, but just kind of thinking, you know what I don't want to do at the end of the day is make a trade with the Rays where the Phillies go to them and are just like, all right, we want to do this, and then have to like negotiate with them. That just seems like an intimidating prospect. But to end that deal, having given up like two prospects from the level you're talking about for Kevin Kiermaier, it would be really satisfying to see a center fielder who is such a pure center fielder like Kiermaier out there. Like that's going to do the Phillies so many favors. And the guy I see in center field kind of strikes the same note. So like that just being able to see that level of like what we kind of were hoping Adam Haseley was in the middle of becoming at one point, somebody who knows how to like play center field at Citizens Bank Park, to be able to pick up the outs that like perhaps your left fielder can't get to, that's going to serve them so much. Like the improvement is going to be clear, I think, pretty immediately, especially with a guy like Kiermaier.
And he doesn't break the bank either. I mean, he breaks the Rays bank, but he wouldn't break the Phillies bank. Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, anytime you can have a starting center fielder for under $10 million who can do what he does, that's, I think that also fits in with the Phillies' financial schedule here.
I'm with you on Marte as well. I think he's at the part of his career where he's going to be shifting towards a corner outfield spot. Yeah. Same thing. Like I'm not unnerved at the idea of him being the guy the Phillies pick to play center field, but that's not a long-term solution.
Right. Exactly. And maybe they're okay with that, but you know, I think if you get Marte, then you're just getting the one outfielder, and I don't know what you're doing in the other spot. We could, you know, there's enough outfielders out there that you could find somebody cheaply if you did want to go Marte in center field. But here you, in this way, you give yourself the option of a leadoff guy and or a middle of the order guy in Schwarber, and then a good defensive player who's going to hit at the bottom of the lineup, and he'll get some hits for you there too. Playing center field, Kiermaier is not a black hole offensively. He's just about a league average offensive player. The one move I know the Phillies are going to make is they're going to get a closer, right? One of the things. It really seemed like Dombrowski was hot on getting a closer. And there's a few different options here. You could go buying at the top of the free agent market, and that's Raisel Iglesias. The guys right beneath, Kenley Jansen is a tier right underneath him. And then you could make a trade for Craig Kimbrell, who is absolutely on the trade block with the White Sox, or make a trade for somebody like Josh Hader. If you're looking for a true established closer, those are essentially your four items. Other than that, you're looking at guys like Mark Melancon, guys like Hector Neris. I mean, guys who have closed before but I don't know that you would necessarily say, yes, that's a lockdown ninth inning guy. And it sounds to me like Dombrowski really wants a lockdown ninth inning guy. So I think this is the area where they actually do try to spend a significant amount of cash, because if you look at the guy I have them going out, I have them going out and signing Iglesias. MLB Trade Rumors, again, has a 4-year, $56 million contract for Iglesias. That's $14 million a year. Kimbrel already makes 13. And I think there's more question marks with Kimbrel than there is Iglesias. Yeah. And you have to give players up to trade for him.
And Not to cut you off, but as far as like the capital being spent to acquire a closer, like I'm already nervous jumping into a closer market, no matter what you're thinking, just because relievers are scary. And yeah, we are talking about some of these guys because of how stable they've been pitching at an elite level at the back of their respective bullpens. But it's still kind of nerve wracking because of how many times a pitcher has come here and failed. And I know we usually make jokes about that, but it's also a very real situation. That being said, the names you mentioned before, like the Kenley Jansons and the Mark Melansons of the world, like, yeah, like that wouldn't be upsetting to see the Phillies go for those guys. But I would rather them be spending money, I think, than players to acquire specifically a closer. And as far as Iglesias goes, like, I mean, yeah, that's addressing the problem. You know, Iglesias has like over 18% of the fly balls he allows become home runs. Isn't that insane?
That's crazy. But I mean, but he's still, I was looking at some of his numbers. He ranks third among all relievers and first among free agent relievers with a 33.3 strikeout to walk ratio, which is just crazy. He's 10th in strikeout rate among pitchers who threw at least 40 innings last year. He struck out 37.7% of batters, only walked 4.4% of batters, gets a ton of guys to chase balls out of the strike zone. He's third in swinging strike rate. So I think that's why this makes sense to me. I mean, the only other guy that I feel like gives you the same kind of certainty as a closer is Josh Hader. And I shudder to think of what it might cost to trade for him.
Same. That's the Brewers selling high if they are to deal him. And yeah, that's a high price to pay for a relief pitcher, one who had a very, very good 2021, but still a relief pitcher. That's a lot. But to the point I just made, the 18.3% home run to fly ball ratio that Iglesias put up this year, I'm not trying to talk you out of him, but that's also a statistic that Phillies relievers led baseball in this year.
Yeah, so lots of home runs.
That is an area where they may not improve if Iglesias is the guy, but he would certainly go a long way in stabilizing the back of that bullpen.
Right. So, I mean, I think that's my plan for it anyway, just because I see, and when you look at the numbers, it looks as though Jansen and Kimbrel will cost about the same as far as dollars and cents go. So I'm going to go after the top guy. You would have to give up your second round pick. He was given a qualifying offer this year, so Schwarber would not cost you a qualifying offer, but Iglesias would. So Dombrowski has said that that's not a deal breaker for the Phillies at this point, nor should it be. And then rounding out the roster, I only have a couple other moves here. I have the Phillies. I think if you're looking for like a Swiss Army knife type player, which I know a lot of people have a couple different guys that they've mentioned to bring onto the bench, guys who can play some different places. I think a guy who would cost virtually nothing, you could get him on a 1-year deal, it might only cost you $1 million, is Josh Harrison, 33 years old. Hit 279, 341, 400 this year. So it's a 106 OPS plus, 741 OPS. He had a 2.0 WAR. I watched him a bunch with the Nationals this year before he got traded, and he played really well for the Nationals. And I think if there's some uncertainty on the infield, he would be an upgrade over somebody like Freddie Galvis. He doesn't necessarily, I mean, Galvis can play shortstop. Harrison's not really a pure shortstop. I think he's mostly third base, second base, but he can play some shortstop for you there. But I think Harrison's a guy who will give you a good stick off on the right side of the diamond. And I'm thinking if Didi Gregorius does end up sticking around with the Phillies, and you do bring Bryson Stott aboard to play shortstop, you can maybe have Harrison and Gregorius doing a platoon of some kind if need be. I'm not exactly sure how it works out, but I'm seeing Josh Harrison as a bench guy to add. I think he also brings a really good veteran presence, a guy who has won in the past.
And he's been with the Phillies before.
Has Josh Harrison been with the Phillies, really?
I believe so.
That? Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Bring him back. Yeah. Bring Josh Harrison back. Good. I do have the Phillies going out and getting one more reliever, and it's Ryan Tepera. I think he'd be cheaper than Hector Neris and Corey Knebel. I like both of those guys. I would be very happy if the Phillies brought back Neris and or signed Knebel. But Tepera is a cheaper option. 2 years, $12 million, according to MLBTR. So that's a $6 million average annual value. He's 34, but at a 2.79 ERA last year in 61 innings. So he'd be a guy that I would bring in to potentially be a setup guy for the Phillies as well.
I scribbled Tepera's name down as well.
He's
got some appeal. He definitely is. He keeps the ball from being hit hard. You know, like mm-hmm. he's got that slider four seamer combo that actually works for him. Opposing batters aren't able to barrel up on him too much. So he's got some appeal as well. I also want to say that Josh Harrison has never played for the Phillies. That is, in fact, something that happened in a season in MLB The Show that I was playing. And somehow I absorbed that as reality. But I checked, and yeah, totally wrong.
I thought I was missing something. Okay, good to know. Listen, there have been so many players, and you guys know this from what you're doing with continued success with the Mason Jar. There have been so many players come and go. you might mention a name like, did he really? Did I black out when that happened?
Okay. That's scary. I legitimately was. That's why I was like, oh yeah, Josh Harrison played for the Phillies. Absolutely. That's wow.
Oh, that's great. And then, you know, there's just a couple, and then there's moves around the edges, you know, like this is where I think the Phillies really need to get aggressive and looking at this week. Teams are going to have to make some decisions on their 40-man rosters and their Rule 5 picks. And this could be a week where you see the Phillies make a couple of trades, especially for an organization like the Rays, who have a glut of players. The Tampa Bay Times had a list of different players who may or may not be protected, and some of these names were kind of interesting that we're on there. You know, Brent Honeywell is a pitcher who could be available. I don't know a lot about these guys, but we're looking up some of their numbers and some of their stats, and they looked interesting. A guy named Phoenix Sanders, who I just love the name. Sounds like he could be a lot of fun as a Phillies ad or something like that. So
I've been talked into it on the name alone.
Yeah, exactly. So the moves that I mentioned just right now would cost $47.4 million. Which is a little more than the $43 million. And so this is where I feel like there's also the possibility that the Phillies might have to trade someone away in order to create some payroll space. And that's where I think you could see a trade of Gene Segura. Not because of anything Gene Segura has done or not done, but in order to clear some space under the luxury tax. And I really don't love the idea of doing this, but if you want to kind of add these different pieces, I don't see how you can make all these additions and stay under the luxury tax. It's just really difficult to see without moving somebody off of your big league roster. And Gene Segura seems like the most reasonable guy to move. He makes $14 million. So if you signed Iglesias and then traded away Segura, you basically wipe out those two moves from a financial standpoint. And so if you move Gene Segura, my thinking is you basically platoon Gregorius and Harrison at second base and give Stott the shortstop job. And that kind of sets you up at second base, shortstop, and third base. There's a lot of uncertainty there. I don't know that it's necessarily, you look at that infield and you say, yeah, World Series infield. But I don't know, you know, I would prefer to keep Gene Segura with a Schwarber core, a Schwarber, Kiermaier, Hoskins, Harper, Real Muto core. I think that gives you a good offense. But financially speaking, I'm not sure if you want to make these moves and improve in left field and center field and closer and get a couple other relievers. I feel like somebody's got to go. And if somebody's got to go, Gene Segura makes the most sense because I think you can figure second base out if you're going to give shortstop to Bryson Stott.
Yeah, and I was thinking this when we were talking about the Gregorius-Stott combination at shortstop and the Phillies going with that in reality at the start of the season. One area where we don't really improve the Phillies with this scenario, yours or eventually mine, is the middle of the infield defense. Like that's somewhere where the Phillies do need to improve, and I don't think we've really done that. And you know, again, I have some moves I want to suggest to you just to get your take on them. But I feel like, because in one of them it involves a Gene Segura trade as well, and the issue you run into is then who plays second base? And in your case, like, they just don't, there just isn't a second baseman, and it just makes me feel like we have shifted like the strength into the outfield rather than the infield, which is just kind of moving things around rather than fixing things in a sense. So yeah. I'm not saying we're totally wrong here, but I do think that popped into my head because that's an area where the Phillies definitely need to improve as well.
Right. Well, I want to hear what you have because that's my list. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll hear your list because we're a little overdue for a break. We'll hear your thoughts and then we'll get to the Fanatic stuff as well. So we'll break and we'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So before the break, I gave my ideas for fixing the Phillies for the 2022 season this offseason. Now it's Justin's turn. So Justin, fire away. What's your first move here?
Well, I also had Schwarber. I said, I liked that idea. I like that he checks two boxes. Looking in left field, I feel like definitely you can hit the free agent market and find the answer to the Phillies' issues there, I think. And Schwarber is a guy who provides answers there. The more interesting thing I was trying to do was come up with a way to get a center fielder I liked via trade. And trading, I don't think is it's not the Phillies are incapable of it. And even when people are like, oh, the Phillies can't trade their prospects, well, they find a way to like make the deals they want to make. You know, they do. They found a way to make deals at this trade deadline when we were like, no, they have no farm system, but they still got Kyle Gibson and Ian Kennedy from the Rangers. I'm not saying it was a good deal. I'm just saying they found a way to make it.
Right.
One of the things I obviously went right to Byron Buxton, somebody the Phillies have been linked to before, a guy who was offered a $70 million extension by the Twins and then reportedly rejected it in the middle of the season. Twins are a team that, another small market team that seems, due for some churn, had a ridiculously disappointing season. Expectations had been very high that they would be able to capitalize on the previous year, and they didn't. And Buxton is a guy who's, he's going to make some money. So it's a little bit of a stretch, but that's the deal where I thought, okay, you got to give up. You give them Gene Segura because their whole plan last year was, well, we're waiting for this shortstop prospect, Royce Lewis, to get up here. He's a little ways away. We need a veteran stopgap. Let's get Andrelton Simmons, and we'll just wait for this guy to come up through the farm system. Well, not only did Simmons, like I said, put up one of the worst Twins offensive seasons of all time, but then Royce Lewis tears his ACL and the whole plan goes to crap. So they're kind of resetting over there. And, I thought about making them take Didi Gregorius in this fake scenario, but Gene Segura is, the better player and has been very good for the Phillies and was basically the engine of their offense for stretches of this past season. He's also a shortstop. He's also played the majority of his career at shortstop. So that could potentially be their guy if you finagle the deal, enough. And obviously, I think you're going to have to throw in some prospects as well. But, that's how I saw them, like, acquiring Buxton. But then are you paralyzed from making a whole lot of other moves? And which prospects do you have to give up? I mean, this is a premier player. With Buxton, you're getting a guy who is, also kind of Roman Quinn. Except when he's playing, he's playing at a much higher level than Roman Quinn ever did. Except that, he's played like a fraction of the season for many years. And as John was alluding to earlier, I was not considering myself locked in by any kind of financial restraints in this exercise. So in that case, I was like, wouldn't it be great to have Schwarber in left, Buxton in center, and then just pick up Chris Bryant, knowing that you're going to have to fill in maybe half the season in center with Buxton hurt, knowing that you're going to need somebody to back up Boehm figuring out how to play defense at third, and you're going to need somebody filling in at first with Rhys Hoskins. And then I thought, don't we spend a lot of time complaining how the Phillies treated Scott Kingery, and now all we want to do is bring in these guys to play every position and assume that that's not going to tear them apart the way it did with them. And this is like various analyses of players that are trade candidates or free agent candidates have noted that a lot of these guys would prefer to just play one position because it's it's easier on the psyche, it's easier as far as approach goes, and to get into a routine is a lot easier. So I won't say I abandoned that idea, but I did stop thinking about it. Here's the really stupid one. I love Ramon Laureano in Oakland.
Yeah, he's good.
He's a terrific center fielder. He has saved so many runs with his arm alone. Like his outfield assists are incredible. He's able to cover a lot of ground. It's a huge, it is not a friendly to outfielders stadium he plays in. Here's the tricky bit. Laureano was suspended for 80 games for using PEDs. He's got 35 mm-hmm. games left. So you're basically missing a month of him. But that's what I feel like. This is the kind of deal that I feel like the A's would make, or even the Rays might make.
Yeah.
Acquiring a guy who's like, oh, well, you know, he's out of the question because you don't get him for, you only get him for 5 of the 6 months of the season. But, you know, that obviously is going to impact the price you got to pay for him. And also, the A's are unloading again. You know, mm-hmm. the Reds are unloading. Somebody else is. Who was the other team I was looking at?
The Pirates are always looking.
Pirates are always unloading. Yeah, but like the A's are back to it again. So there's, you know, perhaps you can. That's somewhere where you can unload Didi Gregorius's deal and send him out there, make him part of a package, and get in exchange for a guy who, again, you're doing them kind of a favor by taking on a deal that they might not want to have anymore. And also a guy who's been suspended and won't play for the first 35 games of the season. Obviously the value of that comes in when he's able to, when he's able to play again. And in the meantime, you know, Mickey Moniak's out there or something. And, you know, yeah, that's not great, but it's also the experiment we feel like we didn't get to see. And I think the Phillies came back around and Dombrowski said something like, oh, yeah, no, we like Mickey again or something the other day, where it was like just his journey through the Phillies organization.
I don't believe you, Dave.
Yeah. But whatever. Yeah. The point is there would be a stopgap out there that would serve as like the last, you know, shot, or the last most recent shot for somebody like Moniak before the actual center fielder takes the role. So I think I just like Laureano enough to put that experiment out there. I'm not sure it's something the Phillies would realistically do, but it does feel like a deal that the teams the Phillies are trying to replicate would do. Mm-hmm. So that was at least worth considering. And as far as relievers go, Aaron Loop is, I think, at the top of my list.
Yeah, I had him on my list too, and I scribbled him off because I was like, I don't know if I can make that work money wise, but I would love to bring him back.
Yeah, Loop's his sinker cutter combo keeps the ball on the ground. More than half the batted balls he allowed this year stayed on the ground, and that's just I keep looking at that stat as far as closers go, because mm-hmm. you know, when you give up more of the other kind of batted ball, that's where the Phillies have ran into a lot of trouble the past year. He's got a 2.245 FIP. Only 2.7%, less than 3% of the fly balls he did allow were home runs.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the kind of guy who I want living at the back of the Phillies bullpen. I had a couple other names scribbled down.
So he would be your closer? You would elevate him to the closer's role?
I think I would make him the closer, and honestly, I'd probably look into bringing Hector Neris back in a setup setup role. I think that's realistic, and I don't think anybody would have a huge problem with that. I'm going to steal this one from Destiny. I also kind of like the idea of signing Corey Knebel. From the Dodgers. He served as an opener for them, and he was a pretty successful one. I wouldn't say the Phillies had, I mean, would you count, is Ranger Suarez really filled out a much more critical starting role for the Phillies? I don't know if I'd call him, like, he didn't really open too many games, so I don't know if the Phillies had a guy who was like a what is become like a definitive opener in the modern game. They would just kind of like have a bullpen game, and it just was what it was. So to have a guy who can actually fill that role opens up a new strategic dimension for them if they want to do that. I'm not wild about the idea of the opener, but if the Phillies want to be able to do that, they need a guy who has done that. And I think that's a good addition to the bullpen, because not only does he give you that option, but he's also just like, he put up a good season for a guy who can come in and give you some long relief when you need it, which, you know, is becoming more and more a part of what a baseball game is like.
Right.
So yeah. I liked the idea of throwing him in there as well.
Yeah, no, I like both those relievers. And I think if Dombrowski and the Phillies front office sees a setup guy, I mean, Knebel has closing experience. He saved 37 games for the Brewers. Mm-hmm. I think it was in 2017 or 2019, a few years ago, when he had his big season there. You know, you could go after one of those setup guys who had really good numbers last year that has really good stuff, and make them the closer. As I was listening to Dombrowski this past week, it sounds to me like he wants the certainty of someone who's done it a lot before.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree with you, like, that I think it would be great if they could find a couple of guys that they could do it like the Rays do it, you know, where they just have a bunch of guys. It doesn't matter who they bring in for save situations. They have 10 different relievers with saves, you know, that's typically what they do every single year. And if you, you bring in Loop and you bring in Knebel and you have Neris and you have a couple other guys, there might be a couple of young guys on the Phillies that take a step forward, like a Connor Brogdon, you know, this year, who pitched pretty well last year, yeah, and is ready to take another step forward.
And so you need that to happen, I think.
Sure.
Yeah. You can sign, you know, and with the focus being on let's really, really do this. So I can see the Phillies signing your Kenley Jansons or your Mark Melansons, mm-hmm, and I wouldn't be necessarily unhappy with that. But, yeah, you're not going to fill out the bullpen with a bunch of A-list free agent signings. You need your Brogdons to like, take a step forward and do their, yeah, play their role as well.
Yeah, like they're counting on Sir Anthony Dominguez.
Yeah,
they've mentioned him.
Just
a bunch,
incredible,
you know.
Yeah,
I know.
I mean, hey, when he was back pitching in the minors this past year, I wanted to see him come back to the major league levels so badly. Like just thinking, oh man, what if he came back and he was, you know, he found his fastball and he was able to pitch again. Like what a great injection of velocity and skill that this bullpen sorely needs. But that whole situation just took way too long to sort out. So just to see him back in the bullpen, I'm glad he's being considered. I hope he's able to be as effective as he was previously for the Phillies.
Right. Well, those are our ideas, folks. And if you've got ideas, you know, feel free to shout them out and send them to us. You know what? Here's the way we're going to do it. If you've got ideas, go to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating, and give us your ideas, your players, the players you want to see the Phillies target most, and we'll read them on the next episode of the podcast. But that's how you participate this time around. We're gonna try that out and see how that works. But any folks you specifically you want the Phillies to go out and get, go to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating, and we'll read them aloud on the show next time around. One last thing before we finish up here. A settlement that had been agreed to between the Phillies and the company that created the Philly Fanatic has been settled. And as a result, multiple beat reporters are gleefully making the announcement that the OG Philly Fanatic will most likely be back. The Phillies now have the option to use the old Philly Fanatic or the monstrosity that they created. You know, it was like a cloning experiment gone wrong, with the different eyes and the dumb socks and all the other nonsense that went on with the new Philly Fanatic. The Phillies will now be able to use the old Philly Fanatic. And of course this just, this spurns all of the gifts online. You know, there's the Tommy Lasorda whacking the old Fanatic in the face with the Tommy Lasorda doll. And, you know, there's all the great moments of old Philly Fanatic past that we'll be able to relive and see the OG Fanatic, Justin. And it sounds as though the company that created the Fanatic kind of lost out here is what it sounds like based on the ruling. It sounds like also the Phillies actually kind of had to step up and pay some cash in order to get the old Fanatic back. So, glad the national nightmare is over. What are your thoughts on the Philly Fanatic gate?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't think I was ever as offended at the new by the new Fanatic as
no, me either. It's fun to make fun of. Yeah,
but fun to make fun of. It was more. I was only ever more like legitimately stupefied by the fact that things had gotten so bizarre and low with the Phillies organization that we were actually having conversations of like, the Phillies could lose the Fanatic. I don't think anybody actually thought that could happen, but that conversation was being had was insane to me. Like that is a low point for the organization. Yeah. And again, something else you can throw into like happened on John Middleton's watch. It's like cartoonish and it's got a lot of details, but like at the end of the day, it really just comes down to they didn't want to pay these artists what they thought they were owed. The artists might have, I don't know, like, I don't know what they were asking for. Perhaps it was insane. Who knows? I feel like that information's out there, actually. So, but the point the point is that, like, that this has been an issue for this long enough for, like, you to forget about it and then be reminded of it. That's insane. Like, it's the Fanatic. Like, that's something we would have joked about a couple of years ago. That, like, oh, yeah, the Phillies accidentally, like, you know, wind up in a bizarre negotiation situation with the creators of the Fanatic. I mean, I'm just glad it's over, and I actually can't believe that the old one is coming back. I assumed it was new Fanatic forever. I thought this was over in a lot of ways. So this is great. I mean, it is. It is cool that the old Fanatic is coming back. I am happy about that.
Absolutely, 100%. And I agree with you. I thought old Fanatic was gone for good. I had resigned myself to the new one. And I agree with you. It's I think this was one of those things where it was fun to pile on the new fanatic. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the same guy in the costume, you know?
Yeah.
People
are going to forget. And the fanatic is for kids. And, you know, like I said, after a couple of months, nobody was talking about it anyway, you know, unless you brought it up. Like it just eventually would have worked itself out naturally. It would have been whatever.
Yep. No, I agree. So it's good that it's over and we can finally put it behind everybody. And I wonder, you know what, if they're creative, they'll figure out a way to use the new fanatic and the old fanatic together in some kind of humorous way that I'm not creative enough. You are. You're creative enough to come up with some way that they could make that work, Justin.
Okay, here's what we do. The new fanatic comes out on the field on opening day, starts working the crowd. People are a little confused. They realize it's new fanatic, and they're like, well, I thought this guy was over. Suddenly, he's struck by several crossbow bolts. And riding, falls to the ground, dead. Canonically killed. In front of all these kids. And Fanatic comes riding out on an ATV, waving a crossbow in the air to thunderous applause. They play the Rocky music, let the lights flash. Just incredible moment. That would get people super jazzed. You're totally right. Like, work it into the mythology. You're going to it's an instant crowd pleaser.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that gets fans fired up on opening day. I mean, I don't see how the Phillies don't win opening day if you make that happen.
Seventh inning stretch, he can come out and it's the new fanatic roasting over a spit.
Man, see, this is why I turn to you, because there's no way I'm coming up with that.
And then they can turn it into a concession item.
Oh, that's fantastic. Bulls barbecue. I mean, hey, listen, Bulls always look at meat is expensive. You know, there's the rising price of food. That's no joke, you know. And Bulls going to need to have food. You need meat. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to grill portobello mushrooms out there, right? You need meat for Bulls barbecue. So,
locally sourced.
Yeah. It's a win-win. That's right. And he's free range, you know, so you can feel good about it, you know, when you're eating it. This is fantastic news. So this is all going to work out, and just happy the Fanatic gate is now over. All right, Justin, let's wrap things up here on this episode. Any final thoughts before we go?
We got a dirty inning hit and run up on the Patreon. We talk about Buster Posey's career of singling the Phillies to death as his retirement was announced a couple weeks ago. So I wanted to go back and trace his history of clashing with the Phillies. There's not a whole lot, like, as you would expect for Buster Posey. There's not a whole lot of, like, highlights. There's a lot of just pecking the Phillies to death. But there are a few moments that I had forgotten about that are worthy of talking about. So that was a lot of fun. Me and Trev did that over at the Patreon. So over at hittenseason.com/patreon.com/hittenseason. You can listen to us talk about Buster Posey and all the times he fought with the Phillies.
All right, that'll be good to check out. And at the end of the week, I'm going to get a long overdue baseball card video up on the Patreon as well. So lots of good stuff at the Patreon. Like Justin said, go to patreon.com/hittenseason and find all the good stuff there as well. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin once again for joining me on the show. And folks, also check out the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends about it. Busy offseason coming your way. Make sure that you leave a 5-star rating and a review and get everybody listening to Continued Success and The Dirty Inning as well as Hittin' Season each and every week. And don't forget to check out thegoodfight.com for all the latest news, notes, and rumors going on with the Phillies and Major League Baseball. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.